Hey, Nova Scotia. Looking for ways to show your local love and have fun this winter? Why not visit some fabulous local boutiques and artisan studios? Dine in or get takeout from your favorite restaurant. Maybe hit up a local event. Or even indulge in a night away at a hotel, charming inn, or B&B. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local. Hey, Nova Scotia. There are plenty of ways to get outdoors and show your local love this winter. Why not get outside for an adventure? You could hit the slopes at one of Nova Scotia's incredible ski hills, head out for a hike along the coast, or let all your stress just melt away at a Nordic spa. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local.
Hello and welcome to Tales from the Gutter.
Oops.
oh my god. I'm only coughing internally.
That's not actually true.
I am Mickey.
I'm Blake.
And today we are talking about predictions and prophecy and times that people have written stuff that turned out to be relatively true. And what started as a typical script descended into 8 pages of very specific pointed discussion about Nostradamus and H.G. Wells. So that's what you're getting.
I look forward to this.
It's just, sometimes you're like, oh, I'll include this person, and you start reading about them, and it's like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Are you serious? I'm currently working on producing a series of videos about the weird nonsense that occurred during, like, the first 50 years of studying nuclear energy, because it just gets stupid upon stupid upon stupid. For instance, there's the Canadian physicist who decided to, he had this neat trick.
Harry Carey?
No.
Yes.
Harry Carey. Who had this neat trick of using a screwdriver, two screwdrivers, to hold the two sides of a nuclear core from touching each other and going full on nuclear, and he would just like be like, ah, ha, ha, look at it, got close there. And then one day it slipped and he got hit with a full on blast of Chernikov radiation that was visible and died within 20 days.
Well, that seems like a stupid thing to be doing.
Yes, and Enrico Fermi apparently was like, if you do that, you're gonna die. Stop doing that. And his response to Enrico was, I bet I can do it one-handed.
And this was a smart...
This was during the Manhattan Project.
This is, well...
Yeah.
This is terrifying was, like, the motto of the Manhattan Project. So that's fair.
So
that's
that,
fitting.
Like, you know, rabbit hole. And so I rabbit-holed on Nostradamus and H.G. Wells. Because it got weird. Okay, so let's
begin.
So first of all, you have to understand how history used to be thought of. We tend to think of time as a progression of simple systems growing ever more complex until they collapse for one reason or another, and that which is achieved in that time is what we call progress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're waiting for the apocalypse because we're so obsessed about it, because we have this perspective that says, all this neat Wi-Fi and everything will eventually disappear in some form. Hopefully we'll all be dead by then.
That seems about right.
That is the modern perspective on everything. Hopefully I'll be dead by then.
Mm-hmm.
Huzzah.
That's our terrible motto. That's almost as bad as the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, pretty much. Until the Industrial Revolution, progress wasn't really something the average person ever had to deal with. The most change anyone would have to contend with would be concerning who was in power and who they were at war with. You would pretty much wear the same clothes, eat the same food. Nothing would really change. What you did was probably the same thing your family did, mm-hmm. and how you did it was likely the exact same way.
Well, aren't we the first generation where it's just expected to have multiple jobs and multiple careers?
Like, exactly. Like, there's that to begin with. We're now so used to change that it's like the entire life that your parents had? No.
Yeah, that's not plausible.
Yeah, no, you're going to do something different. Mm-hmm. What is it? I don't know. We'll find out.
At least every decade, it'll be something new and exciting.
Exactly. Even how they went to war was more or less unchanged after hundreds of years, with only slight variations on tactics as gunpowder became more portable and accessible.
You're just going to malign the invention of the crossbow like that?
Fuck the crossbow.
Fine. We all see history in different ways.
It's too tense. Yeah, that's right.
Go on.
That's right. In just 100 years for us, though, we went from the manual spin-action Maxim gun, which is roughly the size of a smart car, to remote-controlled smart sentry weapons that you can just set up on a battlefield, and they trace people based on targeting data fed to them automatically from radar sensors and satellites.
Even the most dangerous game isn't that dangerous anymore.
Exactly, because you can just nuke that fucker. Nuke that from orbit.
Oh, God.
Whereas there are some instances during the French Revolution of people, like, digging up their old family muskets, and that being perfectly fine. In fact, better than average. You have a stick. I have a 100-year-old musket. Mm-hmm. There's a 1 in 5 chance that I'm going to kill you.
There's a 1 in 5 chance it's going to blow up in my hands and I'll kill myself. But
that leaves 3 chances.
Those odds are pretty good.
Yeah, that's 3 in 5 chances where you might, everything will be fine. Nothing will happen. We can walk away.
Listen, in 3 of those 5 chances, someone might declare peace in the time that you're firing anyway, so... Unlikely, wars tended to last 100 years or more.
Except for the 100-year war.
Yeah, I know, right? I love that.
Which isn't even 100 years, or one war.
Anyway. Wasn't there a 7 years war as well?
Yes.
It actually lasted 7 years?
It lasted 7 years, unless you count the fact that the American Revolution was totally a part of it after, because, you couldn't have had the American Revolution without the 7 years war.
God damn it.
Yeah, and then technically... The French Revolution and Napoleonic Wars is also a part of it, because it would never have happened.
I feel like you'll argue me on this premise, but I also feel that it's worth pointing out that World War I and World War II were so popular because their names kind of make sense in the general imagination.
There is actually this wonderful theory.
Fakery about how many years they took place for.
Oh, exactly. It's very simple. Yeah. Who was involved? Everyone.
How World War One had a great name to start with.
Yeah, the Great War.
What war was that you fought in? The Great War. Like, oh God.
That's why I like what the Russians call the Second World War. It's the Great Patriotic War.
Ooh, so the Great War and then the Great Patriotic War.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are both good too. Inherently so well-named wars. Terrible periods to be a human being in.
Terrible.
Terrible. Inherently great names.
But there's a great economic theory.
The Vietnam War? Meh.
Good
it
music.
Just places it far away. It gives you decent music, lots of horrifying chemical weapons and things, and burnings of people.
Well, you know, you gotta have it.
My lies and stuff.
Better than the invasion of Cambodia, which just sounds like homework.
Cambodia sounds like homework. It does. Read and write me a report on the first 4 chapters of the invasion of Cambodia.
And then you have to read it out as Henry Kissinger. Cambodia is a country that has 1.5 million people, and if you attack them within the north... Yeah, anyway!
Way to make Cambodia boring.
Don't forget to bring a wife.
Don't forget to teach you about all the skulls and the cannibalism and the fucking war camp, or concentration camps and everything. Isn't Cambodia the one that had
the Khmer Rouge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, you want to... There's your nasty Wikipedia entry for the day right there. Oof. Good God, go read about that.
Yeah, that's a nasty one.
Yeah.
And recent, relatively.
Oh, there's worse than that, but we'll get to that on the news show.
Oh, yeah, we'll definitely have to touch on that one.
The current affairs program. There's some things going on.
Where was I? I had the script. Even fashion remained relevant for far longer. Bell bombs were gone and back again 3 times in the previous century, but the ruffled neck frill, which came with precise and specific laws about how to wear it, lasted over 200 years.
Laws.
You could be executed for wearing the wrong size ruffle, because it would suggest that you are making fun of the king. Too large a ruffle, that's sedition. Too small a ruffle, that is sedition. You have to be really goddamn
specific.
Carry
about ruffles, that is insecurity about sedition.
The Elizabethan age was a weird goddamn time.
Mm-hmm.
So, for the most part, life was very predictable, and our concerns for the future mostly dealt with within lifespans of those telling or being told a prophecy. Mm. So you wouldn't hear, like, oh, the world's going to end and blah, 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 blah. It would be more like, you very specifically are going to have good or bad fortune.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff like that. So you were...
Nobody cared about the big picture?
Big picture didn't matter because that was God's domain.
So it's like, meh.
Yes. But yeah, it's like, if the vast majority of civilization truly believes that the world is built by God and, like, the whole thing is just a game board, then in many aspects, the future doesn't matter beyond, like, just what you get out of it.
Mm.
Because no matter what, it'll play out to God's perspective. There is no point in trying to understand the future. It's just what God's going to do.
I've been to church. I've heard this theory.
Yeah, yeah. So your kid or some other kid will come to rule such and such a land. A great battle will be won if you go to war next week. If you travel to the east, your crops will grow strong. Nonsense like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people would even think, like, to imagine, oh, imagine what life would be like in the future. Because history up to that point was pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they would simply assume 100 years from now would be just like now, with a different ruler, but probably the same family.
I don't know if you're going to touch on this or not, but I love the idea from earlier time periods, like these eras you're talking about.
Yeah.
That the earth was terribly old and running out of, like, life and energy. Like,
yeah, this
was,
yeah.
Like, Romans thought the earth was on its last legs because it had been around for so long.
Exactly.
And it was like,
yeah,
you thought that and you were fucking Romans. Jesus Christ. I love that. That's
like,
so interesting.
I love the
meanwhile, obviously they're not wrong in a way. It was super old, but it certainly wasn't, like, on its last legs or, well, knock on wood after that or, like, running out of energy, or, oh God, kind of knock on wood a bunch.
I love the fact that there were people 2,000 years ago who looked at all the extravagance of Rome and said, this is the height of civilization. There, you can't go higher than that. Simply because in that world space that they had, mostly agrarian world space, that is the highest you can get. Until you hit technology.
That makes still a lot more sense than today's. We can have infinite years of growth on growth on growth. That's how the model works. Every year growth. Infinitely repeated. Finite resources. Fuck yourself.
I think we're in this weird bubble where people... Technologically, we should be on other planets. And we will have infinite resources then.
Yeah.
But we're not taking that
because
one step.
Because we're bacteria. We are.
No, we totally are. That's the whole point of...
Yeah.
Spore.
And I love that people, like, get offended by that comparison. They're like, what do you mean? That's terrible. It's like, think of another species that behaves like humanity does to its host.
Just gimme.
Yeah, gimme. Acknowledge it, and it's fine. And then we go to space, and then we become our neighbor's problems.
Then we're gonna steal your son.
Space neighbors! You're in trouble now, space neighbors.
I was reading about this.
We've gone afield again, I apologize.
I was reading about
this. I'm pretty excited about our new series, Space Neighbors.
There's this wonderful series, I can't say its name because it's in German, but they do this
you
great...
try.
No, I cannot. It's a Kurzschlusskopf.
I have no idea how to Google that, so I will not.
Exactly. But it's this fantastic explanation of scientific principles with colorful, cheery cartoons.
Okay.
And one of them is the black hole bomb. And you can make a weapon that creates a black hole and can destroy entire civilizations and star systems and shit. Or you can not detonate it and surround it by with mirrors, and it becomes an infinite generating, like, reactor that will outlast the universe. Yeah.
The face I'm making does not work on radio, but...
But he's definitely going like, what?
I'm quite perplexed.
So, like, because black holes spin,
mm-hmm.
they are giving out some form of energy, and that energy absolutely escapes.
So you're talking about harnessing a black hole.
Yeah, it's essentially just making a paddle generator out of a black hole.
That's great. So the next time, let's make that our goal. seriously, the next time someone's like, oh my god, what's the meaning of life? Be like, living long enough that you can procreate for generations and generations and generations to go on and create this machine so that we outlast the universe.
Yeah.
Because then, what can't we do?
Exactly. And because
that's great.
Black
but it'll
holes,
take a while to get there.
Well, there's...
So you gotta stay alive.
We can...
Keep it up.
...technically build black holes. We have done that.
We have the technology.
We have the technology. And
that's concerning.
Instead of...
That's concerning.
No, I love it. That kill
pun?
Us all.
That's pretty happy.
Concerning.
Yeah.
CERN.
CERN.
Ing.
There you go. There you go.
But,
heavy
wink. Where was it? Oh, yeah. Because black holes are so much smaller than stars, to make a Dyson sphere, you have to, like, mine out an entire planet. To make one of these
There's
black
no
hole
way
generators,
one planet has enough...
Oh,
resources to make a Dyson sphere.
You're absolutely right. You'd have to mine an entire system. You're absolutely
at
right.
At least. And then take it back to the next system over to make a Dyson sphere around that, because it's the only one that's habitable in that level. Well, I suppose you don't really need the system. You just need the surface around the sun.
Yeah.
Oh, it's actually quite efficient.
Yeah.
You destroy the entire solar system minus the sun.
And really you only need, like, a glass-like substance. So you could actually blast it, like, just blast carbon. But... You could do that a lot cheaper with a black hole generator because they're so much smaller.
But a Dyson sphere is just so much cooler.
I know, but it's a lot of effort. Where was it? Right. People who can't
Please
imagine
tell me they
Dyson
named
spheres.
That after the vacuum guy. I'd like to think they did.
No, but I know that there is a connection there where, like,
his great, great, many times great.
No, it's,
grandson will invent
it's
the Dyson sphere.
It's something more
Granddaughter,
specific.
Granddaughter, you're
like,
right. I apologize.
Like, no, I think it's named after, like, the same guy because came up with some space-age vacuum technology.
That's fantastic.
Einstein invented a fridge.
He gets no credit for it.
I know. He invented, all it is a better consumer fridge. That's it.
That's
it's
so
just
much better
a fridge.
Than the theory of relativity. What did you invent? I invented the theory of relativity. Like, great, you
fridge?
Thought something up. You invented a theory. Thanks.
Yeah. What does it
say? Was a thought experiment. Great.
What do you mean, time's not time? Fuck you.
Mm-hmm. What else did you invent? A better consumer fridge. Like, that's fantastic. My fridge sucks. This is great. Does it clean itself? Does it not stink unless I put baking soda in it?
I think it uses non-toxic ingredients.
That works.
Yeah.
That's necessary.
Yeah. It's
yeah,
important. Because, like, some woman died from... fluorine poisoning, and he like read it on the news and was like, we cannot have that.
We're gonna talk about plastic on the news show.
Plastics.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
We should plug that show because we've dropped we've not dropped the name now.
The
twice.
Industry is doomed, which oddly is the only one that Deezer did not pick up. I don't know why.
Interesting.
Yeah, they just won't. It's like,
they're just not down with it.
Okay.
That's fine.
It is the most chaotic.
It is definitely the most chaotic. I like that though, they won't pick it up. It's like, no.
Too filthy.
It's a scandal, though.
Where was I? Okay. Technological developments taking so long to occur and spread. Few, if any, people could tell you the non-mythical origins of technology they used. Like, no one could tell you where that plow design came from. They would probably say it came from the gods. Or whatever. It had always been present, and it wasn't until the 18th and 1700s that we could see attempts to, like, predict the progress curve of technology. No one sat around thinking, what will farming look like in 100 years? But now there are entire people who are paid vast amounts of money to do that,
mm-hmm.
And it usually works out for our benefit. But that's how we think of the future now. They didn't think about progress curve, we think about progress curve.
Well, it's funny that we don't even just think about it, we assume it.
We assume it,
like,
and worry horribly about if it won't happen.
It's true. That's not a bad quality to have.
Not the worst. You know, it's the modern mind.
I'm down with that.
What they did have, though, was prophecy. And prophecy is more about a warning of inevitability than a prediction of what may come. A prophecy would say, a great conflagration will come about upon the peoples of this world, and then try to fit the resulting events to that inevitability. So you're not saying someone will invent a better mousetrap. because that's an inevitability. Like,
can you imagine if that was how you like told fortunes?
Right.
That's great. But that... crowd, while I tear apart the innards of this lamb to tell you about the better vacuums that are coming. In the future, machines will suck dirt from carpets, which are also a thing.
Your lottery numbers are 7, 5, and 18, because this gut right here. See it? See that? That's a 7.
And that's a kidney stone. And that means that's a 9.
Snake eyes! Where was I?
Nostradamus eventually. Not quite.
We're almost there. Whereas a prediction would say, if weapons development and colonial expansion continue at the current rate, a large-scale conflict is likely to occur. One is talking about a very specific thing for a very specific reason. The other is just going, yeah, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and but prophecies were treated as if they were fucking true, like hard true. So some of this will be prophecy, some will be prediction, and the line between them will be pretty stark. Okay, so... the ancient world was littered with prophecies thanks to some key active oracles that day in and day out, every goddamn day, for thousands of years, would produce prophecies and visions of the future for individual people. Like, there would be grand national ones for, like, the city state, but the vast majority would just be, like, you go up to the oracle, you pay a dollar, they tell you a fortune.
This is still a thing.
Yeah, but, like, this was... It was like commodity trading or, like in getting insurance or something. This is just a part of your daily life. It wasn't even, like, I believe in this. It's, no.
Everyone believes in this.
Everyone believes
in this. It's part of our culture.
It's a very basic economic structure.
It's like how we all believe in paper money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it works because we are all
Everyone collectively believes it works.
So a ridiculous amount of human civilization effectively came down to asking a magic eight ball its thoughts on your plans and agreeing with it 3/4 of the time. Because you didn't have to go along with an oracle.
Well, you can't really tell the future, so what's the better plan here? At least they're dressing it up and having a bit of theater with their planning.
Right? And like, it's one
Mind
of those...
you, studying things does seem to have better results than just ripping apart a lamb's intestines to tell you what will happen.
And even Greek myth is very specific that says, listen, if you just don't roll with this, it'll be worse for you, so just go with it. Just pretend it's real, even if it's not, because if you don't, you might end up fucking your mom.
That went places.
That went through a very specific place.
That sure did. Oedipus, keep on going.
Yeah. Where am I? If stuff didn't work out, then it was either because you did something wrong, or the gods were capricious. It was never the oracle's fault.
I like that the gods get to be capricious.
Right? They get to just be like, you know, I had this grand scheme, but then I thought, why?
Judeo-Christian God gets a bad rap because he's clearly insane. Based on the Old Testament.
Well, at least he's not capricious.
Yeah, but he's also got a strict moral code. It's horrifying, but he has a strict moral code.
Exactly. He will hold to that for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Zeus will hold to a belief or promise in 5 minutes.
Who's the greater monster?
The rapist who likes to pretend to be a goat?
I would go with both.
They're both pretty evil.
There we go.
Possibly the best known of the ancient prophets was Cassandra, a likely fictional princess of Troy, who had the gift of perfectly clear and, like, average language prophetic vision. She would just be like, you're going to die when someone stabs you in the face at 3:00 in the afternoon.
Shame no one believed her.
Exactly. No one believed her, and she was the only one in all of history that was just like, this will happen.
That's a great story.
Then it happened.
That's a delightful story. It's a horrifying story, but
yeah,
it's very fun.
I love Cassandra. She's just like, are you kidding me? She was blunt and direct. They were all going to die. The city would burn. It's all hell and then Paris's fault. Kill them and kick them the fuck out. And then everyone went, shut up, Cassandra, and within a decade, they were dead.
Pretty name, though.
Oh, great name.
I think we have to pause the show.
Oh, we should
the dog security has alerted us to incoming visitors.
All right. So, prophecy is kind of a bitch like that. See how I just played that as if we didn't have a half-hour break there?
I was just thinking, you're kind of a bitch like that, and then I was like, that's unnecessarily
mean. Ah, terrible.
You can be that way in the past, but I don't see you being that way in the future.
More realistically, though... Fuck. More realistically, though, not counting John of Patmos, who was really just using the literary genre of prophecy to discuss political relationships between the early church and Rome.
Revelations!
The most famous prophet who likely did ever live was Nostradamus, or Michel de Nostradamus, or Notre Dame, or however the hell you want to say it. So what do you actually know about Nostradamus?
Very little,
right? It's curious, isn't it?
Well, I'm a little educated, so you know.
Yeah, with the book smarts. With the book smarts. So did you know, for instance, he was kicked out of school for selling drugs?
No.
When he was a student at Université de Montpellier, it was discovered that he had been working previously as an apothecary, which was considered by the school to be manual labor below the station of a student.
Hilarious.
Yeah. So he got kicked out for having had a job.
So he got kicked out for drug dealing, and then he got kicked out for being a pharmacist,
essentially. Yeah, exactly. Then he had to go back to work as a pharmacist because he got kicked out of school. So the kind of stupid shit. That was his second school. The first one got closed because of plague.
What the hell year was this?
This would be, so he was born in 1503. So this was, and he died in the 1560s.
Okay.
Yeah. So
pretty good for plague times.
Oh, I know, right? And he was a professional plague doctor. That's what his actual job was. He was actually, like, emergency response plague doctor. Plague would break out somewhere in France,
for that job.
Right? And he would be sent along with other, like,
plague
doctors.
How did this guy become fortune teller central?
Well, I will get to that. Where am I? Okay, he went back to a third school to eventually get his doctorate. And he was a full-on doctor, a physician. Born in 1503, Nostradamus was an astrologist and a physician. A doctor at this weird point in history when knowledge of anatomy was expanding, but working alongside leftover magical remedies and beliefs from previous ages. So, like, he could diagnose that you have an inflamed appendix, but it's because of witches. Fucking witches, man.
You're mentally imbalanced, but it's because of an imbalance in your humors.
Yeah.
Humors.
Spit some phlegm and take some leeches, and you'll feel much better, and the swelling in your brain will go down.
Put this coin in your ear for 28 days. You'll be fine.
The gout will go away, I swear.
Gout is notoriously caused by not having coins in your ears.
Oh, is that Florent?
No. Not for a moon.
He was a frontline plague doctor for much of his career and was famous...
Frontline plague doctors is the best goddamn metal band name I've ever heard in my life.
Just like, how to try to die in the Middle Ages. I'm a frontline plague doctor. He was actually famous in his lifetime for creating a rose pill. It's essentially like, what is the name for when you boil something until you have like 1/1,000,000th and people call that a cure?
Homeopathy.
It's essentially that, but using rose water. And he sold it to the
rich.
So it's
more effective than homeopathy.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Because it was a popular and effective inoculation against the plague. In that, if you could afford it, you were probably so rich that you're not living among the squalor that leads to plague.
Okay.
So it's a wonderful coincidence that you took the rose pill.
It's like how AIDS is cured by giant amounts of money.
Exactly. Isn't that curious? So he became well-respected and very wealthy as a successful doctor in that regard. As a respected doctor who also famously dabbled in astrology, everyone had a hobby.
A lot of this was just acceptable, that this was just a routine hobby.
Exactly. It was just, oh, you know.
What do you do? I knit. What do you do? I play the emerging sport of racquetball. What do you do? I tell the future.
Tell the future.
Sometimes by pulling apart sheep. I'm really on
this really
pulling
to
apart
to the
sheep intestines.
Read
thing.
Them entrails.
It's, yeah. What is that called?
No, reading the entrails.
No, but there's definitely
you're thinking of auguring. Auguring is reading the bird flight.
No, there's definitely a word for it. I'm going to find this.
Yeah, please do, because I'm curious.
Auguring is reading the bird flight.
Yeah, so like the way birds swarm, the shapes that they make, the patterns they take. And the Roman Senate wouldn't make a decision unless the birds augured well.
If Doctor Who has taught me anything, and it's taught me many things, it's that, yes, there were state augurs in ancient Rome.
Caesar was a state augur.
Really?
The highest state augur
Did he foresee himself coming to power and then getting stabbed in the back?
Especially when he made sure it happened through his position as the Pontifex Maximus?
Well, probably not the stabbing in the back part.
No, not so much that.
He might have missed that part of the...
He did kind of lay the foundation. It is all his fault.
He just tuned in for the first episode. He was like, that was great! And then, you know, missed that all-important episode,
too. He'll come to a conclusion. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Hey, I got all the power in the known world. This is great. What could possibly go wrong? Enemies.
Well, wait for that. I'm actually producing an episode on Caesarion, because his son, if you look at the way that everyone was like, oh, prophecies about, like, you know, the coming king and Messiah and all that, and you look at, like, his lineage in terms of mythology, Caesarion was the king that was promised in every single aspect. Every line of genealogy from him ends up in a god. And he got stabbed at, like, the age of 16 and died penniless in a ditch.
Why was he penniless?
Because he got fucking overthrown.
Well, I suppose.
Caesar Augustus, his cousin.
Yeah, there's really no, like, gracious, gentle retirement for you at that point.
Yeah.
Your family will not save you now.
He was the last pharaoh in a line of 3,000 years. And he just got murked, even though he was the most, like, prolific in terms of this guy should be king of the world.
We're still waiting here, so why don't you educate us on Caesarion a little bit?
His father was obviously Julius Caesar, who was descended, according to myth, from Aeneas. Aeneas was the guy who was the grandfather of Romulus and Remus, but he was a refugee from Troy. He was related to King Priam, Paris, and Hector, and through them, Aphrodite and Zeus. His mother, Cleopatra, is descended from Ptolemy the First. Ptolemy the First was likely the half-brother of Alexander the Great.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Is Philip got around. And Philip claimed to be descendant, they're called the Heraclid, and anyone who is descended from Hercules is a Heraclid.
Hmm.
And Greece used to be fucking stupid with them.
There we go.
Oh, Heruspex.
Yeah.
Heruspex.
Heruspicy. Or Heruspicy.
I think I saw that word in Asterix and Obelix once.
Heruspex, that's fun. They read the... Wait a minute. Yeah, they read the livers of sacrificed sheep and poultry. Ew. I'm not appalled by the sheep one, weirdly enough, but the chicken one is gross.
Chicken one fucks
Birds are disgusting. Like
Birds are gross.
Yeah. Every time they talk about bird flu, I'm like, there's a surprise. Have you seen the inside of a bird? Gross. Cutting up chicken is disgusting. We're really getting far afield.
Where were we? Okay, so...
I hope we get comments on my squeamishness over birds now, not on the content of this show.
Right?
Just on that.
Oh my god. Where was that? Okay, so he happened to dabble, Nostradamus happened to dabble in astrology, and because nobles, like, very rich and powerful...
He happened to dabble, that's all he's known for?
Yeah.
Oh, history.
Right?
Fickle beast.
Because nobles would be like, hey, do my horoscope, you're smart, do my horoscope. An actual, like, doing an actual horoscope is an incredibly laborious procedure in which you have to, like, star chart for decades and determine the position of... bodies at different, like, times, and then reference to, like, enormous volumes of material and previous prophecies, and it's a goddamn chore.
And he got paid a lot for this, and or enjoyed it, preferably and.
He hated it.
Oh, I hope he got paid a lot for it.
He got incredibly famous and rich for something he hated. But he found a way around it, because he was smart. And this was around the time when, if you're just smart enough and liked by the nobles... you can go really, really, really far.
Mm-hmm.
exactly. So what he did... also, Nostradamus sucked at astrology. He sucked at it. Astrology is supposed to be this very personal thing where, like, you have to do the specific star chart of that person and then specifically relate it to, like, super contextual clues about their life. And he was like...
but I'm bored and tired.
I don't wanna. So he would forget entire equations or not bother to, like, plug in things like someone's birth date.
Huh?
Which for astrology is kinda important.
Slightly.
Yeah. So he liked the money and the respect, but he hated the actual effort. So he decided to write an almanac.
Nice.
Just so that, like, people could... you buy the almanac, you look at it, stop asking me questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can buy almanacs still, usually up at the grocery store checkouts alongside various issues of Archie, crossword puzzles, and soap opera digests.
Best farmer's almanac.
Exactly.
I don't know what makes these farmers so prescient, but, like, I'm good on them.
Well, okay, I actually go into that.
Oh, good, okay.
And mostly they haven't really changed in content, just how people think of them. Their primary use was and still continues to be for farming.
Yeah, either, man.
Yeah, telling you the best time to plant your crops and harvest based on the activities of the previous year, and, like, okay, this year we're at declination X, so the time shifts to this, so compared to last year, put your crops in at this point.
And see, sorry, this is the first part of the episode we've gotten something I actually find useful, though. Like, not in terms of the content of the episode, but when it comes to, like, you know, divination and all that nonsense, like,
yeah,
you know, read all the sheep entrails you want, please don't, but it's all a bunch of goddamn hooey. But the Farmer's Almanac, I haven't read one in a billion years now, but I remember stuff like, you know, you're not supposed to plant until after the first full moon in June because that's when the most risk of frost is gone, and that kind of thing I love, like...
And that's really...
That's actually useful.
Yeah, and a lot of, like, prophecy interpretation, because remember we talked about that guy who his job was just to write down the prophecy that some other dude said?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the interpretation came at his level where you were expected to be knowledgeable about the world around you, so you can be like, oh, well, that actually refers to this well-known thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so really you're not saying something new, you're just trying to remind people of things they should already know.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
No wonder Miss Cleo is so popular.
Exactly. Because she's doing the exact same thing Nostradamus did. It's just reaching in there and masturbating that bullshit gland. Just as far as you can. So, where am I? Often these would get to a specific, like, crop and date. Like, plant corn on this day, cabbage on this day. And more often than not, it was good advice. And that's why almanacs became, like, known as good wisdom. There's a reason that these things were... No one ever, at some point, like, burned the almanacs because they were witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those who wrote them would fill space around the general helpful stuff with, like, other tips, clever games, wise sayings, and sometimes a horoscope map would be included because fill that content space with instructions for how to do a rough reading.
Mm-hmm.
So these are essentially, like, it's like a McDonald's placemat version. Like, even then, it was kind of like, it's not really a horoscope, but, you know, have some fun.
Yeah.
You're a Libra. Go have fun.
It's like the Chinese restaurant where you look up your year of the animal.
Yeah, it's like completely context.
Very obvious things about it.
I'm an ox. Yay.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
I have a good sense of humor. How do they know?
However did they know? However.
I'm testy and I hate most people. How did they know? Oh, yeah, everyone.
Nostradamus, however, stuffed his full of quatrains, which are little poetic bite-sized prophecies in no order whatsoever. So the reader would go to the map, they would do the hard work of calculating their horoscope themselves, then they would read the prophecies and pick and choose whichever they thought best matched with themselves.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It was like a little mini choose-your-own-adventure.
Exactly. And so everyone loved them because, I always get such a great, you know, like... Because
you have a choice.
Exactly. That's all it is he's just playing to people, to everyone's
Although
ego.
Maybe that was his point. Maybe it was, like, his way of being like, hey, dummies, you can't foretell the future. You have a choice. Like, you make shit happen.
While it may seem that he's...
Nostradamus, like, was woke, man. Come on.
He was, but I don't think he wanted anyone to know.
That's what's great. That's awesome.
Because, like, I think there's ones where it's like, no, he delivered... Actually, I get to it, so... Hold on. Over the years, he wrote over 6,000 of these four-line prophecies. 6,000. And from the very beginning, worked very much the same as Cards Against Humanity. To write them, he simply turned to his vast knowledge of history and politics that he gained as a 3-time university student and emergency response doctor being sent around Europe. Redescribing events from history in a poetic format that was popular at the time.
Hmm.
So all he did was essentially take memes and say, like, explain historical events in memes and then claim that that's actually prophecy.
He would have been great in today's, like, online media landscape.
He made so much fucking money.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he didn't at the time. So he became so popular that Catherine de' Medici had him summoned to Paris because she interpreted one of his almanacs as saying that there's this plot to murder the royal family. And she's just like, what do you know about this plot? Tell me now. And he got dragged to Paris thinking that he was going to be executed.
That's hilarious.
She gave him a job as the royal physician for her son and to do all the horoscopes of everyone in the court.
That's a tough job when you're working for a complete batshit crazy person.
Right, and when you're just like, I seriously thought you were going to kill me because, you know, like,
I'd be like, on one condition, you don't interpret any of my shit anymore. I interpret my shit.
That was actually one of the conditions. Is like, how about I tell you what it means?
Yeah.
And you don't get scare the handle. Fuck out of
me. No, keep your men from, hands off minions.
So, of course, he became even more wealthy and famous. And at this point, he's in his 50s or so, he had all of his prophecies condensed into a couple of volumes called Les Prophéties. Because, you know, creative.
Mm-hmm.
Critics at the time panned as derivative.
Nice.
Yeah. But continue to sell to this day and are well past their 200th printing.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, like, bullshit, but so successful and so.
Are you telling me that mystical bullshit written in book form, pandered to the masses, is actually telling the truth about the future? Is. A successful way to make money and sell books.
And still be, like, people still look at
me. I am flabbergasted.
Since before he died, people have been interpreting everything he's written, and it's been, like, ascribed to many events, but many of them now have, like, multiple meanings of, like, well, it meant this, and it meant this, and it meant this, and it meant this.
This all sounds eerily familiar, Mickey. I can't put my finger on it.
Whatever could it be? The possibilities
are endless.
Speaking of, totally unrelated.
Yes.
What's the difference between Jules Verne and H.G. Wells?
H.G. Wells was not referenced in Back to the Future, despite the fact that he wrote The Time Machine, whereas Jules Verne was.
This is actually true. And
is that actually true?
That's true.
Excellent.
Jules and Verne are the name of his children.
I knew they were referenced, but I don't remember H.G. Wells being referenced at all.
Yeah, but The Time Machine, of course, is not written by Jules Verne.
No, I know, but I'm just really happy that was my esoteric fact answer to that, and that it was correct.
But well,
it kind of flew in the face of your entire question, but like,
well, it kind
that's
of
my answer, and I'm sticking to it, and it is technically correct. Thanks, Alex.
The best kind of correct.
Oh, gross.
But H.G. Wells wasn't full of shit. Jules Verne is full of shit.
Jules Verne, he wrote Around the World in...
And Journey to... Yeah, Around the World in 80 Days.
80 Days.
Journey to the Center of the World, or Center of the Earth. 20,000 Leagues Below Under the Sea. So he helped
I've only read him
popularize
in French, and that might be why I dislike him.
No, it's... His stuff doesn't work as well.
No, I was just talking about my general comprehension of French level. Like, is not helpful for me to be reading.
He's just also not as... Like, his basic concepts aren't as interesting.
I definitely did not enjoy.
Yeah. Not that H.G. Wells is, like, a terrific writer. It's, his like, he doesn't have characters. He has great situations that he tells you about, and you go, wow, that was cool.
Mm-hmm. If only there was a character exploring it.
Exactly. That wasn't just cardboard or literally called protagonist. Like, the main character of The Time Machine, I don't think has a name.
Weird.
He's just the time traveler.
Weird.
Yeah. So, H.G. Wells was a relentless futurist throughout his life. Born in 1866, Wells grew up in a world that was just coming to grips with the idea that technological and scientific progress was unstoppable. He was born around the same time as the first ironclad ships, the Dominion of Canada, and the invention of dynamite, and died after the development of television, the building of the world's first computers, and the advent of nuclear war.
Damn.
So this guy has definitely seen some shit.
When did H.G. Wells die?
1946.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. Wow, he did live for that.
That's the thing. People don't think it. Like, no, he was publishing stuff up to his death. I have some H.G. Wells from, like, first editions from, like, the 30s, and no one gives a shit about him because it's just like...
You gotta feel bad for the people who died, like, between 1939 and 1945. Not just because of, you know, Holocaust and war and horrors.
No one's gonna remember you.
But it's because you died thinking this might just go on like this for fucking ever.
Oh my god,
ever.
Yeah.
At least H.G. Wells had the good fortune to live to 1946, and he's like, well, that was horrifying, but at least for better or for worse, and it seems to be worse, it's done.
Yeah, it's over. We'll actually kind of get to that.
Now I'm fortune telling.
Wells's father was a professional cricketer, and his mother helped run their porcelain and sports equipment shop in Kent.
Jesus Christ, talk about your ultimate first time out suburban yuppie nonsense. Ahead of that's time.
I know, right? I actually had to read that and look at the sourcing article on it just to be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, wow. And talk about fop.
And that's the Victorian era, too. So, you know, fop.
Yeah.
And Wells spent much of his early years apprenticeshipping himself into becoming a teacher at various local schools. Where you essentially, you're a student so long that they're like, ah, just fucking teach something.
That's hysterical. That's hysterical. You can't seem to fucking leave. You're our worst student, so why don't you just teach?
He would crash in libraries throughout the night reading, like, Plato and shit.
Oh, man, so he was a hipster on top of everything.
Oh, such a hipster. In 1891, he married his first cousin.
Well, I already talked about my home country, so I can't frown upon that.
Shortly after seeing various short stories and reports printed in British magazines and papers. In 1895, he finally got his first novel published, War of the Worlds. Quickly followed by Time Machine, Invisible Man, Island Dr. Moreau, and First Man on the Moon, and decades of success in publishing. Mm-hmm. While very popular in his own day, it was only with time, a great deal of it that Wells was around to see, that his predicting experience and, like, ability came to the forefront. Because, you know, like, oh, okay, you're just saying shit in, like, the Victorian age of, like, someday we'll fly, and everyone goes, right.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, buddy.
Sure will.
And then it happened. So, for example, in 1914, before the first shot of the First World War, Wells predicted in his novel A World Set Free the eventual development of a bomb based on atomic theory that could destroy an entire city.
Hmm.
That was 9 years after Einstein had defined the mass-energy equivalence equation, and only 3 years after the measurement of the Curie was actually defined. Most physicians at the time didn't even know that a bomb was possible, let alone to specifically conceive of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, like, such a nerd that he's looking at things and being like, I bet if you overload the reaction, it will kill us all.
You need that guy in the room.
Right?
You don't want to find that out by accident. You want to theorize about that first.
Like, it wasn't until, I want to say, 20 years after that, that the first official within the scientific community discussion about, you know, we could actually make this thing occurred. And he had already planned out how to war game it. Wells did this using what he called the new system of ideas, where he would plug real-world developments, rules, and variables into an organic world-building system in his head, determine his preferred outcome, and let it play out until it reached his destination.
Jesus Christ, so he had a holodeck in his brain.
Yeah.
He was a foppish hipster with a holodeck brain. I am not sure how I feel about H.G. Wells right now.
Just wait.
I'm impressed, but also, weirdly, just aggressively not.
Like, in my head, he immediately went from being, like, random, like, literary gentleman from the Victorian age to a Sheldon.
Yeah.
Just Victorian Sheldon being like, that has to be like this.
Ugh.
Fuck. Where am I? All of the context the system of his generated helped fill in the realistic nature of his work and lead to the inclusion of seeming inevitabilities. So, like, he world builds like you wouldn't believe, but then it's empty of characters. Because he can't write people, he can just write situations and scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
It was this obsession, obsessive attention to detail that allowed him to extrapolate the real-world necessities of issues that came with, say, a mission to the moon, before commercial flight was a thing.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Wells' predictive ability simply came from him pre-engineering a problem before it occurred and conceiving of the world that would have to exist for that problem to exist in to begin with. You can't think of how to fix an air scrubbing unit on a spaceship if you haven't conceived of a fucking spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
But he will be like, oh yeah, you'd have to have an air scrubber. If you're on a spaceship, the air scrubber will eventually.
That's hilarious. The spaceship step is the one he's able to just skip over lightly. Like,
exactly.
Well, of course.
Well, yeah.
But then they'd need something to clean the air, so you'd need some kind of scrubber. But what if that broke? Like, what would you do?
And that's
like,
the way he's
what about that part way back there, like on the last block where it's cool that we all live on spaceships? Like, well, that's fine.
I mean, that's
obvious. That's a plausible future. That's just what's coming. So shut up, ignorant fool.
So good was he at designing systems and predicting behavior, he invented the real-time strategy game. Published in 1911 and 1913, Floor Games and Little Wars, two little books that described how to play games, meant to be played with miniature toy soldiers on tabletops and, like, on the floor, are the origins of not only tabletop combat games like Warhammer or real-time strategy games like StarCraft, but also the probability-defined combat systems of all video games that include battle and the resource and turn-based strategy games like Settlers of Catan.
Jesus Christ.
He's the one who was like, you can build a game board, and that represents a world, and these mean resources, and this is how you should use probability to actually create conflict within that, even if it's just resource-based conflict.
This is painful, because I want to judge H.G. Wells really hard just based on his own personal background, because I'm that kind of guy. But he's just been deemed responsible for virtually all of my recreation hours, like...
And these books were so, like...
That sounded terribly dorky, but it's not untrue.
But no, it's true. Like, practically all of our recreation time is in some form leads back to, like, these systems he developed. And he did this before the First World War. In these games, you can actually follow through on strategies that did not exist yet in the real world. And would take hundreds of thousands of dead to figure out. Among his predictions were the beginning of the Second World War with an error rate of 4 months that he made in 1944, or 1933.
I was going to say, that is unimpressive.
In 1933, so 6 years before, he predicted it within 4 months. Just like, no, it'll be at this time. And why, of course, he got correct. He predicted the creation and commercialization of aircraft, cars, highway systems, various other applications for nuclear energy, satellites, space stations, fine details of the multi-stage rocket procedure, the television, the internet, and Wikipedia on the internet.
Jesus Christ.
He also predicted the use of eugenics. So here's the thing about H.G. Wells. See, the one major flaw Wells had was that it was his prone perspective. He was an outright utopian. He straight up simply believed that socialism and technology could only make the world better. There's no way this could be abused whatsoever. Even the atomic bomb can only have positive uses. So
wait a minute. What is the possible positive use for a nuclear weapon? I guess deterrent. But,
well, first of all, like,
you know, without using.
Take that from a colonial perspective. So, like, it's good that we have it. Second, mining.
Mining.
It's fantastic for mining.
Mining.
Yeah.
How?
You want to blast an area clear?
Jesus Christ.
This is an actual industrial application that has been approved as a patent. Small nuclear arms used for mass mining. It also liquefies certain, obviously it liquefies certain materials and creates certain materials that will only occur under, like, atomic pressure.
What?
And from the yeah at some point I'll get into there is an element that only exists in the aftermath of a meltdown. The only way you can ever get this element, it's called, like, corium. Is if you melt down a nuclear core. So you have to go through that.
I hope it's pretty.
No, it's black.
Oh my God, it's a good carbon ring.
It's like hard black.
Thanks, I had
it. Eats all.
Demolish seven cities to get it.
And it will kill you.
I suppose.
If you can see it, you're dead. So, he was a firm believer that socialism and technology could only make the world better. There was no possible negative outcome that could ever come from any of this. For someone who built such complex predictive models, he never seemed to consider how people could interpret them or use them.
Well, yeah, you didn't get people.
Exactly, right? So though he predicted the use of eugenics by states to, heavy air quotes, firm up their population, he couldn't conceive...
Firm up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and he couldn't conceive that would end in the Holocaust. So almost everything that wasn't an accurate prediction or wild Victorian science fantasy has aged horribly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's H.G. Wells.
And a lot of the stuff he predicted was terrible shit.
Exactly. It's all like happy-go-lucky crap if you're like a well-off man in Victorian society.
It's super impressive, but also like really disturbing.
Yeah.
Of course you predicted all that terrible stuff.
And now his stuff is mostly considered to just be like things you give to a child to read.
Do we have any predictions that haven't come true from him?
Oh, there's tons. He wrote a story about... he used to also write a bunch of histories, and his histories were very popular. A little factually incorrect, but popular histories tend to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote a follow-up where he predicted, I want to say, 10,000 years of human civilization.
Okay.
And it ends up in, like, 8 civilizational cycles. You remember that episode of Futurama where they get the time machine and that version of the in the year 2525 plays? And so, like, they go to a little bit in the future, and it's kind of, like, a little more futuristic than Futurama. Then they go a little further, and suddenly it's medieval times, and there's a giraffe with, like, human slaves. And then they go a little further in the future, and everything's, like burnt out, and there's, like, robots coming to kill them. Then they go a little further in the future, and the world's entirely flooded, and there's a mermaid man who's actually attached to, like, an elder god. And then they go a little further in the future. Yeah, it was like that, where, like, every version of human civilization was drastically different. And, like, the last one is more or less, like, floating balls of energy and, like, all-knowing.
And, this, like, is what, like, our destiny is?
Yeah. And he's like, and you can reach all this through through eugenics. We can become gods through eugenenics. And it's how about not?
How's about you're going to make some friends in low places with that kind of talk?
Yeah, and he, that's the thing. He never had Nazi friends. He never liked Nazis. But he sure did, in retrospect, carry a lot of their ideas.
Yikes.
Yeah. Which at least Jules Verne didn't, because he was dead.
And he got a name drop in
there you go.
The future. So,
take that, H.G. Wells, you fuck.
Doesn't matter that Jules Verne couldn't write for shit. Doesn't matter.
I think we should probably end it on the Holocaust.
Not the Holocaust and ripping on H.G. Wells.
I mean, both are pretty decent.
I compliment Jules Verne, and that's coming a long way for me. I feel like that's human progress right there.
I mean, you know, it's pretty decent. I was just thinking of, I came across a book the other day by Dean Koontz, and it, like, must have been something he wrote when he was very, very, very young, because it was, like, a fantasy novel, and it had, like, a dime store cover, and you're just like, Koontzy!
That's great. I haven't read Dean Koontz in 100 years.
Nor should you.
No, I know, but I bet it would be really fun.
Thank you very much for listening. Check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/hereyougo. Look at our other stuff. Go to YouTube, My Gender is Cinema. Do you have anything you want to plug?
I would just like people to enjoy us non-ironically, as opposed to the way that I intend to enjoy Dean Koontz. You know, just enjoy us if you must, but, like, preferably, like,
we'll take
with a grain of sincerity.
Oh, yeah, we'll take your sincerity, but if it has to be smarmy, ironic hipsterism, all right.
Just, you know, if you're gonna hate and enjoy us, don't hate and enjoy us in the comments.
There you go. Bye!
Hey, Nova Scotia. There are plenty of ways to get outdoors and show your local love this winter. Why not get outside for an adventure? You could hit the slopes at one of Nova Scotia's incredible ski hills, head out for a hike along the coast, or let all your stress just melt away at a Nordic spa. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local.
Grit. Sure, it's mud and dirt and all that. But the all-new Toyota Tundra TRD Pro is redefining grit. With unrelenting torque, courtesy of the iForce Max hybrid powertrain, connectivity thanks to an impressive 14-inch touchscreen, and total confidence to tow just about anything, anywhere. Yes, the all-new Toyota Tundra is the new definition of grit. Learn more at toyota.ca.